This is KRCU's Going Public Podcast. I'm Dan Woods. Covering everything from education and politics to conservation efforts and health and science, nothing is off limits on Going Public. Thanks for listening. The Southeast Missouri Food Bank has been busy lately helping to meet the need of many families in Southeast Missouri that have been impacted by the coronavirus. On the line with me now to tell us more about what's happening at the Southeast Missouri Food Bank is Lisa Church. She's their Chief Advancement Officer. She's on the line from her office in Sykeston. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Good. It's good to have you on the line with us. So if you would you tell us a little bit about the Southeast Missouri Food Bank?
Sure. Southeast Missouri Food Bank serves 16 counties of Southeast Missouri. Basically, our area is bordered by, we go north to St. Genevieve, south to the Arkansas border, east to the Illinois border, and then west to like Carter and Butler counties where Van Buren and Poplar Bluff are located. So in that service area, there are about 370,000 people. And this is an area of Missouri that has some of the highest rates of hunger in the entire state. So if you look at the area overall, we're talking about one in six people who are living in a home that is food insecure. And what I mean by that is that they don't have the resources to acquire enough healthy food for the family. And whenever you look at child hunger, those rates are even higher. Overall, it's one in five. So what the food bank does is we basically acquire food in mass quantities, and we do that through a variety of resources. We have some food that is donated by retailers. We purchase some food through our Feeding America network. We are part of Feeding America, and Feeding America is the largest hunger relief organization in the United States, and they have 200 food banks all across the United States. So we're part of that network. But we acquire that food on a mass scale basis and then distribute that out to our pantries and through mobile food distributions and some of our other programs. We have 140 pantries throughout that 16 county area. And so those pantries will either go online or call us and place their order for food. We pull that order for them, and they either come and pick it up, or we truck that to them. And when a pantry gets food from us, they don't pay for that food. They only pay a very nominal shared maintenance fee.
So 140 pantries and you have a huge service area that has to keep you all pretty busy. How many employees are there at the bank?
We have about 20 employees at the food bank, and that is kind of evenly split between administrative employees who do things like the ordering and the accounting and paying the bills, all of those things that have to be done,
yeah.
And then our warehouse staff who receives the food when it comes in. We work just like a retail distribution center would. Our food comes in, it's stored on very high racks. The majority of our warehouse, our distribution center consists of a racking system, so the food comes in, it's stored on those racks or in a very large cooler or a very large freezer. The pantries order it, those orders are pulled and then go back out. But we have about 20 people, and you know, during the coronavirus period, which we're still experiencing, by the way, we were able to maintain those employment levels, meaning that even though we were distributing a whole heck of a lot more food, we were still doing it with the same number of people that we had employed before. So our people did an excellent job of staying on top of that.
So what was the demand before the pandemic, and how much have you seen an increase? What's the increase been like?
The increase has been incredible, and incredible not in a good way. We saw many of our pantries, it depended on location, but in some of our areas we saw demand for food double and in some cases even triple. As an example, we operate Good Neighbor Pantry here in Sykeston. And when before coronavirus began, we were seeing about 200, 250 households each month that we served. after that started, in the month following, I think we served 380 households. And in the month after that, it was up to about 600, and then went to about 800 households that we were serving out of that pantry on a regular basis. So the demand for food was phenomenal, and a lot of the people we saw were actually first-time users of our services. You know, they were people who, they have jobs, but they may be living paycheck to paycheck, and then you have a situation where they don't get a paycheck for a few weeks, and they're definitely in dire need. So we saw an incredible increase. And the way that we responded to that was, we not only did we increase the amount of food that we were distributing through our pantries, but we also began holding a lot more mobile distributions. And the way a mobile distribution works is that sometimes we partner with someone, like it may be a church or a club or a business. We will partner with them and hold a mobile where we pack a truck full with food and then take it to a public location that allows for a quick and easy distribution. And the whenever COVID began up, obviously we had to do no contact pickup of food. Before, when someone would come to a mobile, they would basically have a box, or some people bring a laundry basket, and they go through this long line of tables that's set up, and at one stop they may be picking up potatoes, and another stop it's a frozen pizza, and another stop it's canned goods. But we really couldn't do that with coronavirus. So we had to start pre-packing boxes ahead of time. So we pre-packed these boxes, loaded them onto a truck, take them to that location, and then distributed them in drive-through fashion. We normally have 15, maybe on a busy month, 20 mobile food pantries in a month. When coronavirus hit, we started having about 50 a month. So it was more than double the number of distributions that we typically had. But the way that mobile food distributions work is that it allowed us that flexibility to get into other communities where they may not have an existing pantry, or allowed us to move if the pantry wasn't a place that was very easily converted to allowing a drive-through. You know, some of them, where the pantry building is located, they don't have the bandwidth in their parking lot, or the street access isn't such that they can very easily do a drive-through mobile. So we were able to go to some, like, church parking lots, schools in some cases, and do these mobiles so that people could very quickly and easily get in and out. When we first started them, I think the very first one we had was in Sykeston. We had, I believe, 280 boxes on the truck, and that went out. And whenever we got there, we distributed all of those boxes, all 280 boxes, within about a half an hour. That's how many people were lined up to receive food and came through and popped their trunk, and we put the box in, and they were on their way. The next one that we had was that same week. It was, I believe, the week of March the 9th, I think, or 16th. We went over to Poplar Bluff. We had 320 boxes because that was max capacity for our trucks, and it was supposed to start, the distribution was to start at about 10 a.m., and by 8 a.m., there were so many cars lined up that the police department came to us and said, you're going to need to get this started because it's starting to have an impact on traffic. It's blocking traffic. So we started the distribution and distributed all 320 boxes in about 40 minutes.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, it was. It was a very sobering thing to see that so many families needed this kind of help.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Lisa Church. She's the Chief Advancement Officer at the Southeast Missouri Food Bank. Well, Lisa, let me ask you this. Has there been any issues as far as getting enough food to distribute? Has that been a problem at all?
It has in some respects, yes, and here's why. We typically receive a lot of donations from retailers like Walmart, Schnucks, other grocery stores. A lot of them will donate their excess to the food bank because we have the ability to receive food in those mass quantities and then distribute it out very quickly to get it where it needs to go, and into people's hands. whenever this began, obviously the retailers were having a hard enough time keeping their shelves full that those donations dropped off very, very quickly. And we certainly understand why. So when that happened, we needed to purchase more food. We began to have to buy more food because we weren't getting the donations. So obviously that's expensive when you start buying food. We're getting some of it through the Feeding America system, so the pricing is certainly better. For other loads, we were having to compete with grocers for those loads because everyone was after the same kinds of items. Everyone, the grocery stores, the food banks, and it wasn't just one food bank. You know, when we have a disaster, like a tornado or something where a food bank needs to respond quickly to get food and water into an area, usually that's an isolated area. It's just in one place. But when this happened, it was everybody. It was everybody everywhere. So we were all trying to get to increase our inventory of non-perishable foods. So we were competing for the same loads. Well, that would drive up prices. You know, when we would order, let's say, a load of chicken noodle soup, we would normally get that load within about 3 to 4 weeks. Now that time was a lot longer. It was taking us 7 to 8 weeks to get in what we ordered, and we really worried a lot about not having enough food to distribute. So we've had to buy a lot more food, as I said, and just as an example, we typically buy peanut butter by the tractor trailer load because that's kind of a one of those staples that everybody will typically want and will use. So we would buy a tractor trailer load of peanut butter for $45,000. Well, the first load that we bought after this began, we noticed that the price was up. It was about $50,000. And then the next month when we got ready to buy another load, it had risen to about $75,000. And then this most recent load that we had to purchase was $92,000. So we saw that load of peanut butter just within this short period of time increase from $50,000 to $92,000. And that's crazy.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Lisa Church. She's the Chief Advancement Officer at the Southeast Missouri Food Bank. Lisa, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Map the Meal Gap. So from what I read, Southeast Missouri has some of the highest rates of food insecurity in the state.
It does. Particularly in our southern counties, we have very high rates of hunger. Overall, as I said earlier, our food insecurity rate is about 16%, so that's 1 in 6 people. Food insecurity among children is a little higher. It's 1 in 5 children live in a home that is food insecure. In our northern counties, you know, let's take Cape Girardeau County as an example. The food insecurity rate in Cape Girardeau County is 12% overall and then 14% for children. But whenever you move to some of our more southern counties where the job opportunities aren't as great, you have a lot more poverty, those rates increase. So in Dunklin County, for example, 20% of the people who live in that county are considered food insecure. And for children, that's 25%. So, you know, we're already in an area that has very high food insecurity. Whenever you add to that the job losses that occurred, or even people who were still working but weren't working as many hours, so they weren't bringing home as much pay, that increased even more. So, you know, in Cape Girardeau County, when you adjust those figures, that 12% for the joblessness that occurred with COVID, that increases to like 18% overall, and then 23% for children. In Dunklin County, where, you know, where food insecurity is normally about 20%, it increases to 25%. So that's 1 in 4 people, 1 in 4, who live in a home that they may not have access to enough food. And for children, it gets even higher. It's like 34%. So you're talking 1 in 3 children who is in a home where they may not know where their next meal is going to come from. So those are very sobering statistics, and that's always our fear with what we're doing is the thing that keeps you up at night is going to be, are we going to be able to acquire enough food? Right now, we have been. We're very, very fortunate. One of the things that occurred is that we've gotten a lot of community support. We've gotten a lot of support from Feeding America. But we also saw that the government began this community, this coronavirus food assistance program. And how that works is that, you know, you may have seen the videos where farmers were dumping their milk or burning their crops because they didn't have a market for them with all of the restaurants closed. So the government stepped in and said, okay, you producers, you can supply your wares to a 501c3, to a charitable organization for the hungry, and then the government will pay you for that. So what we have seen, and it probably really didn't start kicking off until May, but what we've seen now is that some producers in the area have fresh produce available, some dairy products available. We got a shipment yesterday that was a bunch of crates of milk. So that has really helped. One of the drawbacks, though, of the program is that these producers don't have to distribute to a food bank, so they can have a relationship with any 501c3. So sometimes you might see on the street corner or at a church parking lot or a retail parking lot a truck parked there and just passing out boxes of food. That's probably not going to be us. It's probably that they have made an arrangement with another 501c3. But, you know, the important thing is that we have the way we look at it is that we want to make sure that we have an equitable distribution of food throughout the entire area.
What have you learned in your position about hunger in Southeast Missouri and being part of this organization?
It has been very sobering to work here because I was born and raised in Southeast Missouri, so I knew that this was a poorer area, that especially in those southern counties, there weren't as many job opportunities, and so that contributes to poverty, and that becomes kind of a cycle, and it affects health outcomes as well. So I knew that that existed. Seeing it on a daily basis has been very humbling, and to see people be so thankful for what we're able to do has also been very humbling. And, you know, sometimes it's the little things. For example, not long after this started, we had a call from a mother. We also do registrations for SNAP, which is our food stamps, the food assistance program. So we had a call from a mother there in Cape County. She has a little boy. He's 7. She and her husband had just bought a new house, hadn't even made their first mortgage payment yet, and they both lost their jobs. And so, you know, she was calling to sign up for SNAP, and then we also gave her information about the pantries and the mobile food pantries where she could go and get some food. So she went to one of our pantries, like, the next day, and I had talked with her later. And she had said, her son, her 7-year-old son, loves Paw Patrol. You know, if you have little kids, you're going to be familiar with what Paw Patrol is. So he loves Paw Patrol. So we happened to have fruit snacks that were Paw Patrol fruit snacks. And so he was so excited, you know, that it didn't even dawn on him the fact that, okay, the family didn't have enough money to go buy food this week, that we had to go to a pantry to get our food. He was so excited. He said, you know, Mom, they must have known I was coming. They had these just for me. They had to know that I was coming. And so, you know, you forget about that sometimes, about the impact that the lack of food has on a family. I mean, I can only, you know, you and I probably go to our kitchen cabinets and open them up and look in, and we're hungry, but we don't really see anything that we're that crazy about, you know, to eat. I can't imagine what it must be like to go to that pantry and open it up and there really not be anything there, that there really truly is not anything there to eat. I had a call from a woman yesterday who was wanting to know when our next pantry was in her area. She lived down south in Hornersville. And so we were talking, and I said, well, how much food do you have now? You know, what is currently in your house? And she said, I have a jar of peanut butter and a bag of marshmallows. We live in a very generous community. People have been very supportive, but it still is very, very sobering and humbling to see the difficulties that some people have.
So before we let you go, Lisa, how can people help?
You know, it's very easy to help feed other people. The best way usually is a monetary donation, and here's why. People hold food drives for us, which is great. We love to receive that food. However, whenever we go into the grocery store to buy a can of green beans or a box of macaroni and cheese, we may pay $1 for that can or that box. The food bank has the resources to be able to take $1 and provide 4 meals. So whenever someone donates $1, we're able to buy a lot more with that dollar. So donating is great. You can go to our website at cmofoodbank.org and make a donation. You can mail a donation to P.O. Box 190, Sykeston, and Sykeston zip is 63801. Or you certainly can call us and we can talk through anything that you may want to do to help us. We also on that website have a virtual food drive page where someone can go in and choose to buy a case of peanut butter or some cans of chicken noodle soup and make a donation equal to what that case would cost. So again, our phone number is 471-1818. So any questions, we are glad to talk with people about what the needs are in this area.
All right. Lisa Church is the Chief Advancement Officer with the Southeast Missouri Food Bank. Lisa, thanks so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Thank you. I appreciate that opportunity.
Thanks for joining us for Going Public on KRCU. To hear more interviews, visit krcu.org.